Right, you hear that?
I did.
Okay, so now we're gonna go to this more thing here live on Facebook. Let's see here, can you see what I'm doing?
No.
Okay. I'm typing furiously.
I use Restream and I love it.
Oh yeah.
If you go to restream.io, they have an online studio kind of like this here Zoom setup, but it's a web page. So you, your guest, nobody has to install anything. You go to their
online studio,
and then from there you can send it out to everywhere. So whenever I live stream, I send it to Facebook, Twitter, Twitch,
really?
YouTube.
Let me write this down.
I'll send you a link.
Yeah, send me a link. I'm very interested in that. So I wanted to tell you also, and I told this to Aaron, that Rory Sauter is looking for people to join his network, and you get paid.
What?
To your show by video.
Get paid?
Yeah, they actually take 30% of the whatever they make in the advertising. So there's commercials in it. So I've submitted one show already. So yeah, if you want to do this video stuff, this is why I'm doing this right now. Sharing your timeline, public. We're going to go live. You ready?
Ready whenever you are.
Okay. So you can copy that link. Okay, here we go. Hope it works. Preparing live stream. Here we go. So just something to think about.
Yeah. And I'm all for making a dollar every now and then.
Yeah, right.
I'd definitely like to learn more about that.
So we are live. Are we live? I guess we are.
It says we are.
So, welcome everybody to the American Legion Show. This is your host, Kevin White. Our guest tonight, Mr. Peter Serafin. Let's go back to broadcast. I think we have a delay here.
It was fine. It just went silent for a second.
Yes. Yeah, I'm trying to figure out how this works. Let me go to my Facebook page here, and we might have to change some things around.
Actually, I think that was the delay. I went to the Facebook page to share it out, and it was switching back and forth as to what I could hear, whether it was on the Facebook page or here in the Zoom room. And so I'm here.
Right. So, all right, great. So there's a delay still. Can you hear that delay? Or is that just, can we hear that on Facebook? Does anybody know?
I'm fine. I hear you just clear, fine and dandy. There's probably a couple of seconds between you and I talking and it showing up on Facebook. That's normal.
Right.
Has to get through the entire internet, you know?
Right. It's kind of repeating. So what I'm going to do.
Mute Facebook. Mute it so that you can't hear it.
Right. So probably not on Facebook, but here's what. Yes. Yeah. So I think what we're going to have to do now, here's what we can try. Let's see here. So let me see if, let me check this here and see what I hear. So now we got to double. Okay, one of these. Okay, if I turn this down. So there's a huge delay. So what I'm going to do is I want to ask a friend or something.
Okay. I don't hear a delay. I hear you and I can respond immediately. So between you and I, there's nothing there, but.
Yeah, let me try something. I think we're going to have to go back to the gears here for a second. Oh, maybe this is it. Maybe this is it. All right. Can you hear me?
Just fine.
Great. Even better. All right, here we go. We're good.
All good now?
Yeah. Welcome to the American Legion Show. This is your host, Kevin White. And we are here talking to Mr. Peter Serafin Jr., Mr. Peter Serafin, welcome to the program. Tell us about yourself.
Well, I think it's a rather boring story, but I'm a veteran and a patriot and an author, host a show. And I don't know, I just feel like there's not enough of us out there going out and trying to fix the problems. So I've been stepping my foot into the pond to see what I can do to help fix the problems of our world. And that process started when I wrote a book. I thought, I'm high school educated nobody. I don't have a following or anything like that. What can I do? So I wrote a book. And then after writing a book, I started a podcast. Then the podcast was picked up by a couple of radio stations. So I wrote a second book. And now, I went out and got myself appointed to an elected job because nobody else wanted the job. I do what I can.
Beautiful. Tell us about your books. What do you have? What did you write? What kind of genre are you in?
It's all politics. I hate politics, but I am also consumed by politics. The first one was Progress, really. One Man's View of Social Progress in America. It's a little short book. I write books for people like me that don't really like to read. I write short chapters inside of short books. They're all very, here's the point, here's the problem, here's the solution, or whatever it is to the chapter, and just move along. So I wrote that one, and it's the subtitle, One Man's View of Social Progress in America. It was me looking back during my own lifetime at the progressive movement and what I have seen in my own life. The example I like to give when I'm talking is the Boy Scouts. When I was a Boy Scout, that was right about the time that the Boy Scouts was trying to debate and figure out whether or not to allow gays to openly serve as scoutmasters, or gays to, to be openly gay in the Boy Scouts. All right. Yeah. If you flash forward 35 years, now it's, we just drop the word boy from the title and we give you condoms at camp. So, hey, it's all good now.
Right. Yes.
So that was the first book. Then I started my own show called Liberty Lighthouse. Liberty Lighthouse is a 1-hour weekly show on the Mojo 50 radio network, WBN 324, the World Broadcast Network. And very recently joined the Patriot Nation radio network. I think that one sounds familiar to you.
Right.
And my second book, So Simple Even a Politician Can Understand.
Yes.
Simple Ideas for Seemingly Complex Political Issues. It's about a dozen ideas that have come up while hosting Liberty Lighthouse, about a dozen or so ideas that would really go a long way to fixing some really big problems in our government. And they're really simple ideas.
I think that's what I like about the book. They're simple ideas. And like you said, even a congressman or any politician can understand it. Whether they take that advice is a different story. So how do you compel people? And I've had people on my show and guests that have plans. They're trying to get them out. And how you solve these problems. And I'm sure you address that in your book. So how do you convince in your book people that this is the way to go? Is it just common sense, or is it something
else? Every one of them is just that. It's all very common sense. So to pick a chapter, they're all like the first book. They're very short chapters that basically spell out, here's the problem, here's a little bit more detail about the problem, and here's my proposed solution, or at least my tool that I think that would help. Chapter two So the book is divided into three basic sections. There's fiscal issues, social issues, and then unalienable rights. And under fiscal issues, chapter two is forced philanthropy. Now, the forced philanthropy is basically, why is our government taking your tax dollars and then giving them to nonprofit organizations? If I want to give money to a nonprofit organization, I can give money to a nonprofit organization. The government taking money out of my wallet and doing it on my behalf is forced philanthropy. So it gets really ugly when you have politically active nonprofit organizations. So let's say one party, not to pick on any one organization, but a nonprofit organization that gets heavily funded by one political party and then donates back to that political party. That's the definition of money laundering. But it's my tax money. And right. So the simple solution is simply stop giving tax money to nonprofits, any nonprofits. I don't care, right, left, or center. There's no reason that federal or that tax dollars should ever go to any nonprofit organization. If it's a worthwhile organization, they should be able to stand on their own two feet. And if they can't, there's some serious problems with the organization and they shouldn't be getting money anyway.
Right. You know, and that's, I think that's the whole business behind nonprofit. You know, I mean, we have no say. You have a say. You can give to whoever you want. I don't care what kind of crazy organization it is. You know, if they beat puppies or drown puppies or whatever, it doesn't matter. But we have no choice to say, and this is against our rights. I don't want to give money to these organizations. Not everything I'm going to agree with. So that's my money. It's our money in D.C. That money should go where we want it to go. And yeah, I don't know why that's done. And I agree with you. Sounds like money laundering.
I don't understand why it was ever acceptable to give money to nonprofit organizations at the federal level. I mean, you go all the way back to George Mason standing in Congress. No, not Mason, Madison. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was Madison. While Madison was a member of the House, standing up in Congress saying, "I cannot find the article in the Constitution to put my finger on that gives us the power of philanthropy."
Right.
What changed? Like, from the beginning, our country wasn't supposed to be involved in that. Another example I give all the time about the philanthropy part of it is the Texas SEED Act. Are you familiar with the Texas SEED Act? No?
No.
Okay, so years had gone by, years of droughts in Texas. And the farmers in Texas every year, you know, dutifully planted their crops, but it was a drought, so they wouldn't grow. And they lost that year's seed. So, you know, two or three years later, they're out of seeds. So Texas asked the federal government for money to buy seeds.
Really?
And Congress passed it. And it got to the president's desk, Grover Cleveland, I think. I can never remember which president it was. I think it was Cleveland. But it gets to the president's desk, and the president vetoes it and says, "This isn't our job. Not the authority of the federal government. This isn't our job." The good part of the story is what happened next. A lot of people would say, "Oh my God, how did you let all those people starve?" But what happened next was, Texas took out ads in a couple of newspapers across the country and said, "Hey, your farmers in Texas need seeds." And American citizens started putting seeds in envelopes and sending them to Texas. So much so that the Texas government had to run second ads in the newspaper saying, "Stop sending us seeds. We've got too many." That's what philanthropy is supposed to be.
Right. You're right, because you see all these, you know, they go so far above what they were designed for, against the Constitution completely. Now they're in everything.
Absolutely everything. Yes.
Yes. This is my new book coming out. There is a department in the government for everything, for food, aircraft, hairstyling, you name it, everything's in there. They've got a three-letter agency that covers us all, that controls all of our lives. And we can't live without them because, you know, no restaurant, I learned this overseas, no restaurant is going to poison their guests on purpose because it's all about money. We don't need the inspectors and everything. Maybe you do, in my opinion, the only the strong survive and the people that do the right thing will last.
Okay, but why is that the federal government's job?
Right.
If your local town or your county or your state wants to have a Department of Health that inspects restaurants, okay, fine. What does the federal government have to do with that? The federal government should only be concerned with interstate commerce. So unless your restaurant literally sits on a state border where half of the restaurant is in one state and the other half in a different state, the federal government should have no jurisdiction at all.
Right.
There are 440 of those three-letter agencies.
Wow.
There are 30 to 36 powers granted to our federal government in the U.S. Constitution. So at most, there should be 36 of those agencies, 440.
Yes, I totally agree. I didn't know there were that many agencies out there. I know there was a lot. And I've been a part of some of them, you know, DOD, OPM, the VA, all of them. And I, like I said, a Rory Sauter show, the best people don't go to the government to work.
Right. What's that say about me? I'm a mailman.
My dad was too.
Yeah.
I think that's a little different. Yes.
We've gotten to the point that, yeah, we expect the federal government to be in everything, to fix everything. The amount of redundancy and waste is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Just looking right. Look at OSHA, right? Occupational Safety and Health. There's another department in the federal government whose mission statement and vision for their organization is identical to OSHA. Why do we have both? Take that a step further. Every one of our 50 states has an occupational safety and health department. Why do we need a federal one if we have 50 state ones?
Yes, that's true. And our military has their own OSHA. And the Air Force is called AFOSHA. So, I mean, how many rules do you need?
Mm-hmm. And the military probably should be completely separate. Like,
right.
But still, the amount of redundancy and waste in the not only in the levels of government, but even across from organization to organization is insane. I want a president that's willing to go up there and look Congress in the face and tell the American people and say, look, here's the deal. They're going to pass a budget and I'm not going to sign it if it spends one penny more than we're expected to bring in next year. Not my job to tell them what to cut. They've got to figure out how to stop spending $1 trillion a year more than me. Have you ever sat down to think about how much $1 trillion really is? A trillion is 1,000 billion. Billion is 1,000 millions. Mm-hmm. So I did one of my Liberty Minutes the other day, and I said, if our federal government were to somehow miraculously all of a sudden pass a federal budget, a balanced federal budget, and put $1 billion a year toward the national debt, it would still take 30,000 years to pay off our national debt.
Whoa. Incredible.
And we need to start looking at it that way. We need to start talking about things like that. They're starting to toss trillion around like they're saying a quarter. Now, you know, with the $2 trillion whatever act and the $1.3 trillion. Every time the government spends $1 billion, it costs you $8. So correlation, a trillion is 1,000 billions. Every time they say trillion, it just cost you $8,000.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Because when you see, like, we got to give Ukraine $80 billion, like, it's nothing. And that's their money. That's our money. Well, no, you know, it is their money because that's where it goes.
Yeah. The idea, why are we giving Ukraine a penny? Right. Ukraine used to be part of Russia. They were part of Russia for, I don't know, 3,000 years or something like that. And then they broke away when the USSR collapsed and they became their own independent country. Yay, great. And now, like, it's none of our business.
Right, I agree.
You know, Putin's a commie bastard. I get it. I don't think Zelensky is any better. Did we all forget that, like, what, 3 months before the Russian troops started piling up on the border, they were accusing him of genocide and mass graves over there in the Donbass? And then Putin starts piling up tanks, and everybody's like, oh, he's a saint. Zelensky, he's the hero of the world.
The most corrupt country in the world is Ukraine.
Clearly.
And that's where the WHO and all their experiments are done. And then that's everything's money laundered. And that's why. No, that's funny because I believe Biden was over there with some $1 billion or something, speaking of billions.
Mm.
And it was some kind of pay for play bribe kind of thing, you know. It's just a coincidence, though.
I think it was more blackmail than bribe.
Blackmail? Yeah, like, right.
Of something. We should probably be extortion.
Right.
Here's a pile of money. Do you want it? Yeah, no. Don't get me wrong. When the USSR fell, Ukraine became one of the largest, like second largest stockpile of nuclear weapons on the planet.
Yeah, I heard that.
And they gave up all of those nuclear weapons with the promise that we would defend them. Okay, great. What happened to all the billions that we've sent you over the last 30 years? Now we have to spend, what are we sending? Like $8 billion a month?
Right. That's about right.
Remember, what do we say? Every time the government says billion, it costs you, the individual taxpayer, $8. So that's $64 a month that you are sending to Ukraine.
Right.
You Ukraine that much?
No, I mean, Ukraine has nothing to do with us. That's their own little war over there with Russia. We're America, United States, and our tax money surely doesn't go belong over there, it, just like it doesn't belong anywhere else. It's our money. We should make that decision, not the people in Congress. And, you know, the whole thing about, we could go way back to where, you know, why are we collecting taxes anyway? We could go way, we could do that. We could bring that forward if we wanted to, but we're not going to do that. This is about you. But when they get that power, that's what they have, absolute power, and they get their little pork, you know, not all of it's going to go over there. It's like Marjorie Taylor Greene was talking about, and she's got a lot of guts. I like her. She's in there saying, well, you know, only 30% of the money went over there. Where's the rest of it?
Right.
You got to
right.
wonder, because you know those deals are made. Millionaires are made in Congress and the Senate.
Europe has basically stop sending money there, you know, or threatened to stop spending money because of the billions of dollars that's gone unaccounted. You're like, yeah, right. Well, you can't tell us where it's going. We're not sending you anymore. Hey, what? Accountability? No. Say it isn't so.
It's like putting your money in a dumpster fire, you know, because the Russians, there's no way. Look how big Russia is. And they're in their backyard, right? It's right there. Look across that fence. It's like hundreds and thousands of miles of Russia. We got little tiny Ukraine. There's nothing they can do. There's no way they can fight. There's nothing to do out there. You don't have the right aircraft. You don't have the right people. You don't have the infrastructure. It's just a little tiny square that they can do on a drill weekend. They can completely, and whatever their operation is, that's their business. Not that I'm supporting them, you know, people dying, but they have a lot of other stuff going on in there that people aren't talking about,
you know,
that behind the scenes.
May have had a fighting chance if all of the stuff that was left in Afghanistan had been dropped off of you as we were running out.
Well,
before the invasion ever started, hey, we're pulling out of Afghanistan. We're going to take all of this military equipment. We're going to drop it off in Ukraine on our way back across to the United States. They might have a chance, but chances are.
Well, you know, I'm going to say this. I'm an expert on Afghanistan because I worked on that program, the Air Force program, because I was there when it happened. The equipment that they had was actually belonged to Afghanistan. It was never ours. We don't even use it in our military. And a lot of the stuff they had is hard broke. They couldn't read or write. So they had trouble. I mean, that was not a good thing. You wouldn't want that equipment anyway. But theoretically, yes. That's all they had to do. They could have put it in storage somewhere and then send it over there if they needed it. If that's what they needed, but I don't think they have the technology. There's no technology to take out Russia.
No. If Russia and Russia's
the same, yeah.
If they really wanted to win, they would have rolled right over Ukraine by now.
Right. If they really wanted to, yes. Because just like the MiG-29s, the MiG-29s are old 70s aircraft. I know a lot about aircraft because that's what I did in the military. And they can't see the Russians. They can't fight the Russians. The Russians actually taught them how to fly and they know all their tactics. So, and they get all their parts from them. And they hold something over their head. Every time you order a part, the part comes in with paper on it that says, "We will not use this against the Russian Federation, this aircraft or this part." We found that out in Hungary back in 2001. We were there and that's what the Hungarians are saying. You know, we got to get away from this airplane. Nobody wants that airplane because it's a dog. So when they say, well, this would do that, and this, no, it's impossible. It won't happen. Just by 2 cents.
It's just a mess. And anybody who is blindly following Ukraine and no, I'm all for the people on the ground, the right. Ukrainian citizens, yes. Or the Russian citizens, you know, it's war, it's ugly, it's messy. Nobody should be doing it, but the politics of who's invading who or why, we don't have anything to do with that. We shouldn't have anything to do with that, especially not when we're $30 trillion in debt.
Absolutely. I totally agree. Yeah, I have a problem with anything like that. You know, if you want to build the freeways, that's one thing. But when you want to build the National Education Association, and I know you like this kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
What in the world? You know, and they bring the rules on you and they take away funding if you don't follow. It's like, what's your take on that? That's a bother. You know, I think it came under Jimmy Carter, that program.
Jimmy Carter created the Department of Education in 1979. It became effective in 1980 under Reagan.
Gotcha.
Prior to the Department of Education, we had the best schools in the world. We had the most innovative, the highest test, you know, highest scores on tests. The American school system was the best on the planet. And then the Department of Education. And now we're what, ranked 60th in literacy or something like that. It's pathetic. We spend more money per student than any other country except Norway. One of the Scandinavian countries.
Oh, really?
Country that spends more money than we do.
Yeah.
But the difference is they're at the top of the charts and we're still at the bottom.
Right.
We spend more money per student and we can't get our test scores up. Not to mention it's run by the federal government. Is one of the stupidest things that could ever be done. Okay, first off, here's my argument. Anytime somebody says, well, every other country's got free healthcare, why can't America do it? Or anytime anybody tries to compare anything, well, what about a free living or a living wage? Right. Or what about free whatever? Anytime anybody says anything that the federal government should do, my immediate response is, you name one thing that our federal government has ever done effectively and efficiently, and I'll let you win this argument.
Right. Yeah, you're right. I understand. I totally get it. Because they don't have the apparatus. They don't have the heart. It's like, you know, you give those positions to people you like, your friends, their appointments. It's not about the best qualified or the most qualified. And there's a lot of corruption. There's a lot of power at the top. And I wasn't putting down anything about, I was a federal employee, retired with 25 years. I totally get it. I understand. People at the top have a lot of power. There's a lot of politics in it.
It's just
if you want to be ahead of that, yeah.
it's just like anything else. You know, you stand with the Ukrainian people, not the Ukrainian government. You stand with the you know, the ground level FBI agent, not the guy who gives the orders.
Right, right. It's a lack of structure. A lot of it is. You know, just like the FBI, I have a friend who was an attorney in the DOJ, and there's a lot of great stories. You'd be surprised. Probably not. But that's an example of things like that. Like when the doctors say, or they have doctors that are medical doctors, like the worst doctors in the world, I hate to say it, are the VA doctors. Like I said earlier, the best doctors are going to go work for the VA. They're going to go to make some money. And the best attorneys, same thing. The best everything, they don't work for the government. Unless they need a job and they just get it, you know, by based on their schooling or whatever. So the quality is lower than, and I've experienced this myself. My civilian doctor figured out what was wrong with my knee. Took a year and a half for the military to figure that out. And you know, it's not about, it's just about, you know, you're hungry for money, you're gonna do a better job. I'm gonna pay the attorney that wants to get paid. I don't care. I'm gonna get it done right. A public defender is a little different. There are some good ones out there and everything I'm talking about, but this is how government works. It gets in front of itself and the rules are restrictive. And then people get frustrated and they don't make any sense. A lot of things, just like the FAA requires 2 ashtrays for an aircraft to take off. If it doesn't have the ashtrays, then they will cancel that flight. And I used to work on airlines, and that's what actually what happened. So, but those are rules. I mean, do we need an FAA? Let me ask you this question. Do you need an FAA?
No.
And why?
Here's what I think. The argument is, do you really want the people in Congress making laws about flying aircrafts? Well, kind of. Right. I kind of do. I think every one of these regulatory agencies, okay, so I said earlier, there are 440 federal departments and agencies. About 45 of them have regulatory authority. What's the definition of a law versus a regulation, right? A regulation is a rule set by an authority. A law is a rule set by an authority which carries punishment for noncompliance. So all of these regulatory agencies are actually writing laws, not regulations, because they all carry punishments. So ergo, if de facto, whatever you want to say, they're all unconstitutional because Article 1, Section 8 only, no, not Section 8, Article 1, only the legislation can, only the Congress can pass laws. Only all legislative power is granted to Congress. So any one of those agencies that is creating regulations that are enforced by some kind of a rule are violating the U.S. Constitution and therefore unconstitutional. What they should be, if you have the need to regulate aircraft, which I would agree that we probably do, then that should be like a committee. That FAA should be a group of a couple of union people, a couple of pilots, a couple of engineers, a couple of airline owners, whatever, a couple from every bit that has anything to do with the industry that come together and make recommendations to Congress. And then Congress can say, I'm not going to write a law about a freaking ashtray on an airplane. Get the fuck out of here.
Right. Yeah. I agree with you somewhat. Somehow the military doesn't have an FAA. I'm just saying, you know, there's so many things, I don't know, so many things I see, because now you have the TSA inspecting aircraft in the hangar. That's what we used to see. It's like, what are they? That's the other thing. I used to be a screener back in college, and we treated people nice. So you go get, you get on the plane, and you're treated like you're some kind of criminal. That's what the thought is. You might be the enemy if you make the wrong move. So when you go take, I know you've been on a lot of plane rides. This is the kind of stuff, you know, what's going on here? They're another agency that we really don't need. I mean, it was better customer service. And, you know, when I was doing it, and I caught a guy with the gun once, but I don't understand the whole theory behind why. And I know this came out of the, you know, after 9/11, where they started hyping things up with, you know, the shoe bomber and everything. And now you got to take your shoes off. I mean, it's just it's a hassle sometimes. Yeah, right.
Okay, but wait, back up. You caught a guy with a gun.
Yes, I did.
A guy who had a gun with malicious intent, or a guy who just got that the gun was in his...
Well, we don't know. I don't know, because that was at Clovis International Airport. At the time, there's only one terminal, one concourse, I mean. And he came in, he had the gun set, you know, I don't know if you can see this in the camera. It's like a vertical standing up in his case. So when he got it through, I saw a black mass. They said, hey, put this back again, turn it sideways. And there was a gun. I was like, you got to be kidding me. All right, hit the button, shut down the gate, bring the police over. He went to prison, jail, and then he had a trial. He was a teacher, school teacher. We don't know what his intent was. The FAA paid me $25 for a reward. For So, yeah, that was a pretty exciting day. But, you know, I don't see the same kind of things. And I've argued with guys, screeners at airports, were chasing an F-16 from Tucson to Texas, and they changed flights. So now they're suspicious of us because we changed flights. We're like, we got orders, military and everything. And they go through everything in my bag, and there's a little like a load light tester that I made when I was there. I said, I need this. This is just a light bulb with wires on it. So the guy says, oh, no, I don't know about that. I said, yeah, light bulb with wires. I soldered them on yesterday. So I put it down, and he says, you can't take that. I said, you know what? I don't care. I'll just throw it away. I said, I would never treat anybody like you're treating me now. When I was a screener, I did the same job. I treated people with respect. I got orders. I'm in the military. This is my ID. I'm not here to cause any harm, but you assume that I'm some kind of criminal or something. I'm trying to blow up the plane with a light bulb.
Right.
Those are the kind of things I don't like. Pay, you know, listen to your people, respect people, what they're doing, and then, you know, let them go. I mean, there's no malicious intent. And they can't see past that. I mean, you make a mistake and bring a pocket knife through, and it's the end of the world. You're going to kill somebody. You're going to go in there and do something.
Yeah, with a 2-inch pen knife.
Yes, right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm going to bring the plane down with this. fingernail clippers. Like,
right.
Like you take fingernail clippers anymore. That's in. Oh, my God.
Or 4 ounces of liquid. Oh, no.
What?
What are you going to do with that? Can you tell me what you're going to do with 4 ounces of liquid?
Well, but it might be glycerin.
Right. They don't test for that, but anyway, I want to get off that. Let's talk about you a little bit more. And because I want to ask you about this this rule that came out that Congress passed. So there's two sides to this, you know, this, you know, to bring down the inflation. I can't remember what it's called now, but you know, probably know. But
the Inflation Reduction Act?
Yes. It originated in the Senate. Why didn't it originate in the Congress? Just like Obamacare did the same thing.
Right, which is unconstitutional.
Yes, exactly.
Any bill that spends money must originate in the House of Representatives. It's in the Constitution. It's not theory. It's not constitutional opinion. It's in black and white.
Yes.
The House controls the purse strings. So any bill that spends money is supposed to originate in the House. But let's be honest, it originated in President Biden's desk. It was the Build Back Better plan that they skinnied down a little bit.
Right.
So
yes. So how does that pass? Where's the Supreme Court? You know, I don't think the Supreme Court should make laws. They shouldn't have anything. That's just their opinion kind of thing. But we're the people that are guarding the Constitution.
Well, it's supposed to be us, but we're derelict in our duties. We've spent the last 100 years allowing our government to do these things. I often point to 1913 as the turning point when our government started running off the cliff. I think there were three things that happened in 1913 that started the beginning of the end. The passage of the 16th Amendment authorizing income tax. Prior to the 16th Amendment, the federal government could not reach down into your pocket and take money. If the federal government needed money, they had to give a bill to the states apportioned by the population of the state.
Right. We've come a long way, baby.
Direct taxation was specifically prohibited by our founding fathers. And then we passed the 16th Amendment. Stupidest thing we could have, well, no, one of the three stupid things done in 1913. The second was the passage of the 17th Amendment, which changed how senators were elected. Mm-hmm. Prior to the 17th Amendment, you and I represented our House members in Congress. The state legislators picked the members of the Senate. Thereby, the senators reported back to the 100 or 200 or however many legislators of the state and kept the federal government in check because they had the state government in their back pocket, making sure to protect the state governments and the state powers. We changed how they were elected. Now they're direct elected by the state, making them nothing but a glorified member of the House of Representatives. The three elected jobs in our federal government, members of the House, Senate, and the presidency, are elected by three, let me rephrase that, prior to the 17th Amendment, they were elected for three different lengths of terms, elected by three different groups of people using three different methods, all by design. 17th Amendment changed that.
Interesting.
And then the third is the creation of the Federal Reserve, allowing the government to manipulate how much your money is or is not worth.
Yeah, that's a bad one.
But those three things together have completely flipped the power of this country upside down. We are supposed to be individual sovereign states with an agreement to a federal government to provide certain 30 services. But by flipping the 16th Amendment and giving the federal government the power to directly tax, they don't need the state governments anymore. They go straight down into your wallet. They grab your money and then they take that money and they hold it out like a freaking carrot in front of the state government. Say, hey, do what I want and I'll give you this money.
Yes. Right.
So yep. 1913 completely flipped the power structure of our country. And the only way we're going to get it back is to undo those things.
And a lot of people don't know this. They've never heard this before. And I'm learning something as I go. And what kind of education? Is this self-educated stuff you're talking about? Did you do a lot of reading? How do you know this?
I'm a high school educated person. I don't have a single college credit under my belt. I never went to college for anything. And I just read it. I read books and, read the Constitution and went, wait, that's not how our government works. And then I read it again and go, wow, that makes a lot more sense than what they do today. I am a constitutionalist. I am not a Republican or a Democrat. I am registered
to the
Constitution Party. Believe it or not, we are not a two-party system. We are a five-party system in this country. There are five nationally recognized political parties. It's just two of them have been in power for so long that they've made rules making it more difficult for the other ones to do anything. So I am a Constitution Party member. I believe in the restricting our federal government back down to those original 30 powers. And if there is something that comes along, like let's say we were talking about the FAA, let's say that overwhelming everybody in the country decides, no, we really need to have an FAA. We really need all these rules and regulations. Okay, there's an amendment process for that. Add a constitutional amendment authorizing the federal government to do it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So, this is kind of different for the audience. A lot of people don't know this. But there's so many different things. And just like I found out that if you're a citizen of the state versus a citizen of the United States, I don't know if you're familiar with that, where people are not paying taxes because they don't declare themselves citizens of the United States or
property of the United States. Yeah, I've heard of these things saying that when you took your social security number, you basically became a citizen of the federal government and not of your state. I don't know how much I believe in any of that. It's just like there's another theory out there that after the Civil War, our country was bankrupt and our Constitution really doesn't matter anymore, that there's a secret Constitution that, you know, we were bought out by the Rothschilds or something. I don't know. That doesn't hold water either, because if you think of the Constitution as a contract, which is exactly what it is, the contract was between the 50 states or 13 states at the time, but the contract is between us, the states. So in order for the Constitution to be nullified, the states have to agree to it. And that never happened.
Right. This is we're based on John Locke's treatise that he, you know, pursuit of life, liberty, and property, which is really what we try to do here too.
It's the idea.
Happiness. Yes. I mean, that's not like, you know, substantial enough, because different grades of happiness. If you own property, you're good. You have your own homestead or whatever, and you can do whatever you want on it, and the government leaves you alone. I mean, we are our own government, supposedly.
Well, my theory on that, why Thomas Jefferson changed the word from life, liberty, and property to life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. My theory is that he did not want to use the word property because it could later be used by the slave owners to say, you can't take my property. Because Jefferson, though he owned slaves, tried very hard to put anti-slave language in both the Declaration and get Madison to put it into the Constitution. It was all rejected by the governing bodies, but Jefferson tried very hard to make the Declaration and the Constitution anti-slave documents, but they both agreed that the unity was more important than ending slavery at that time.
That makes a lot of sense. I knew where you're going when you started talking about it. I could see. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, why you changed that.
Life, because I mean, other than that, there's a lot of parts that are quoted directly from other documents. You can find, you know, exact quotes to John Locke, exact quotes, you know, in the Constitution that you know, the Virginia Constitution, because several states had passed Constitution before the federal government did. And a lot of the language of the Constitution was copied word for word from the individual states. So if Thomas Jefferson is going to sit down and quote John Locke, why would he change life, liberty, and property, which is makes perfect sense, to life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness? And one theory was he didn't want to use the word property for fear that slave owners would later go, see, you can't take my property, it's right there. But there's the other part of it is, you know, many, 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 many years later, you have Maslow, who came up with the, what's Maslow's hierarchy of needs.
Right. Yeah.
Our founding documents in the United States are the only founding documents of any nation anywhere in the history of the world that addresses happiness in any way. That's the pinnacle. That's self-actualization. That is the pinnacle of Maslow's hierarchy of needs. So it's a goal. It's an aspiration.
Absolutely. So, okay. But that doesn't make any sense, because if you think about it, so his slaves could not get happiness. They could not pursue. So either way, they weren't going to do anything. So
But even after Jefferson died, many of his slaves stayed on the plantation, even though they didn't have to. Because they treated slaves well. Not because let's face it, the freedman's life wasn't a whole lot better than a slave at the time.
You're right. It's probably a lot harder in some cases.
So slavery was wrong. Of course it was wrong. It's always been wrong. Slavery has existed since the beginning of mankind. It's not an American institution. And ending it is difficult and long and ugly. You can't just take, you know, what was it, 300,000 slaves in America at the time or something like that. You can't just say, okay, you're all free, and not provide something somewhere.
Yeah, I totally agree. That messes with the culture and beliefs, and makes a completely different class of people. They have different spiritual, religious, or whatever. It's just a whole other culture, and all that stuff goes back. And they like those. You know, it's like the slave foods. I mean, they introduced watermelon. They brought them over, the seeds and everything. And that's what they ate in the fields. And it's not really that ironic that Black people like watermelon, right? I'm not saying it's racist or anything. I'm just saying that's part of history. The ham hocks, the food that people don't eat still to this day. A lot of Blacks still eat it. They eat the stuff, but a lot of people don't. It's a culture.
Yeah.
So we brought a lot of stuff. There's a lot of stuff that are brought, including Oreos. They brought a lot of things to this country. And we see this every day. We see how people from other countries, the Hispanics, everybody brings their own thing. And that's what I love about America. There's so many different people, different kinds of cultures here.
But to give you a non-American example of exactly what you're talking about is look at Scotland versus England, what they eat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, the haggis, for example, that in Scotland, it's a sheep's stomach shoved full of organ meats. You know where that came from? It's because the rich English landlords came and slaughtered the sheep and left that crap behind for the Scots to eat.
Wow, interesting.
But now, you know, thousands of years later, they still eat it because that's what they became accustomed to. You know, I'm Italian. I eat a lot of pasta. Do I like rice? It's okay. But if I have a choice between pasta and rice, right. I'm pasta.
So you're indoctrinated at one time because you're Italian and the family and everything. So I totally get it. And that makes so much sense. I like to try new things. I grew up 3 years in the Philippines. I like Filipino food. It was just an impression thing for me.
Soba. Nice.
Right.
The soba. That's Filipino. Soba. Yakisoba. I think that's Filipino. I don't know.
Yeah, there's so many good food. I mean, I know you were actually, thank you for your service. You were in the Navy and you did a lot of, and I appreciate that. And I love having, you know, veterans on. Not everybody has to serve, but you know, you took that step. That's a huge step. And you went to basic training and it was crazy. And then, you know, that I appreciate the work you did, but I'm sure you've seen a lot of things, been around the world, different places.
I didn't really get to go a whole lot. I ended up getting stationed on a training ship. So we did a whole lot of, you know, weekend and 2 week sea cruises. We didn't go out for months and months at a time.
Yeah.
We didn't do any of the big long cruises. We went up and down the Eastern Seaboard from Canada to Puerto Rico and the Caribbean islands and Mexico, up and down the Eastern Seaboard.
That's the best place to be, better than the Middle East.
Yeah. I was in during the first Gulf War, but again, it was a training ship. Mm-hmm. So the reservists that were getting called to active duty would stop off at ships like mine, and it was our job on the ship to remind them what it was like to be active duty and then ship them off to Saudi or Kuwait or wherever we were sending them. So yeah, I had a pretty easy duty as far as safety and comfort levels. I hated the reserves. I did 2 years of active duty and then 6 years in the reserves, and I hated the reserves. I hated switching back and forth between active duty and civilian life.
Right. Yeah, I could see that. It
was fine, but the two of them trying to switch back and forth just didn't agree with me. So when my 6 years was up, I'm like, all right, I'm out.
That's cool. I understand that. I mean, you're all in or you're not. And I was in the Guard, so we did the same thing. If you're a Guardsman, I can see the hassle, but if you work full-time like I did, it's different because you feel like you're actually active duty. And yeah, it is. I was at the training unit for 4 years, and that's all we did was training. We didn't have any combat related anything. We didn't go anywhere. And we did the exact thing that you did. I totally understand where you're coming from.
Yeah.
But you're training people to do the stuff you're not going to do.
Yeah. And then so I left the Navy. I went into hospitality. I was a food and beverage manager for some pretty really big, well-known companies. I was really close to executive level management, and I decided to give up management. I was tired of never really getting vacations, never really being away from my work because the phone was always ringing, or, you know, Right. Everything's always your problem. And so I gave up management, and now I'm a mailman. And being a mailman really sucks. But at the end of the day, when I go home, my phone doesn't ring anymore.
Right. So I'm absolutely. I know exactly what, because I worked for the airline and I never got time off, really. I mean, I was working, my wife was in the hospital. I was still working on the computer in the room. She had surgery. It was that bad. I got a call on Christmas Day and, you know, where is this? What's that? And I couldn't take that anymore. So I decided to work for the government as a contractor. So it worked out. It's kind of funny. So tell us about you have this thing called the, I can't remember what it's called now. It's, I have a blank in my mind.
The Liberty Minute or the Liberty Lighthouse?
The Liberty Minute. Yes. The Liberty Minute. I'm telling everybody this, they're brilliant. Do you have anything to share with us that you can share with us?
The Liberty Minute is a 1 minute news headline every morning, weekday mornings, Monday through Friday. Surprisingly, it takes me like an hour to produce one minute video.
Really? Okay.
So how the process normally works is at night, right before I go to bed, I get the day's last cigar and I go out on the porch and I read news headlines and I read a whole bunch of them from a whole bunch of different sources. And I look for something that strikes me as odd or offends me in some way or gets my blood boiling or whatever. And then I sit down and I write my own version of that story. Or I bring up parts, a part of the story that for some reason none of the articles are mentioning or something to that effect. And when then the next morning I wake up, I check the headlines in the day to make sure that the world didn't explode and there isn't something bigger and more important that I need to talk about rather than whatever it was I wrote the night before. Then I sit down in front of a camera just like this and I record it. And then I posted it on all of the social media network on social media sites. So by the time from writing to recording to posting and sharing and all that kind of stuff, it takes probably about an hour a day.
Incredible. So the Liberty Minute, I love hearing it because I listen to RBN a lot. RBN is great. Everybody needs to go out there and check it out. And I know you do a little bit of on the side hosting there.
A little bit.
And
a little filling in. A little filling in.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that network. Just like I like our network, PNR. We've had I've had two guests from there, two hosts as guests. And one was a doctor. The other one was a guy who did other things, predictions, whatever. And we've had other people from it's just a great network and it's 24/7 and to the best people in the world on there. So you appear on there. I hear you all the time.
Yeah, my Liberty Minute has been picked up by three different radio networks: Mojo, awesome. 50 Radio, Republic Broadcasting Network, and WBN 324, the World Broadcast Network. It appears on all of them.
Wow, that's incredible! And you're doing a great job. I love it because your voice, first of all. Your voice is fantastic, perfect for it. And it catches your attention.
Thank you very much.
and it sounds so authoritarian. And by the way, your beard, I saw your picture without a beard. Now you have more mojo and more authority with the beard. So you're legit now.
And another way I come with Liberty Minutes, and I just thought of this as we were talking, one of the things I often do is combine stories. So, you know, here's a story on 1,200 people died, or, you know, 500 dead at the southern border this year. And then here's a story about Joe Biden, and we've allowed 4.9 million people into the country since he's been president. And I think, right. Wait, there's correlation here. So I come up and I create a story. Like my Liberty Minute this morning, for example, was just that. It was, hey, you know, 4.9 million people have been let into the country since Joe Biden became president. 900,000 of those were gotaways, people that we saw but were unable to apprehend. In the 4 million that we did encounter and actually process through, there were 56 known terrorists. So let's take that same terrorist to alien ratio. And that would recommend or suggest that there were 12 terrorists in the 900,000 gotaways freely roaming throughout our country. But chances are reality is higher because terrorists and criminals don't want to get caught. They don't walk right up to the Border Patrol agents and say, hey.
Right.
So we've got all those. And then, oh, by the way, since Joe Biden has been elected, also 1,200 people have been found dead along the southern border. And, oh, by the way, also, fentanyl has become the number one killer of people 18 to 45 and is responsible for two-thirds of the drug overdose deaths in our country.
Yes, it's an epidemic. So we can actually control that, though, but right, we don't.
And that was that was today's Liberty Minute, where I took probably four different news stories and kind of squished them together because they were all related. And I tried to put it into one minute. Hey, look, here's the border crisis in a Liberty Minute.
That's right. Yeah. This is the thing, you know, it's the same thing with Afghanistan. We don't know who's coming on those planes. We don't know. And we already saw what happened, you know. They're coming to this country, they're raping people in Wisconsin and different places. There is no vetting at all.
Nope.
Just like the border, they have the National Guard down there, and the National Guard has no idea how to be Border Patrol agents. And I think it's working against them, and they don't want to be there. That's not what they're trained for. But that's the Band-Aid everybody uses for everything. The governor is going to use the National Guard. Just leave them alone. I mean, they're part of our defense. They're not there to help out the governor.
Right.
You know, the governor controls them. Just like in the Washington, D.C., when they had the National Guard, Pelosi had nothing to do with it. She has no authority over the National Guard. It's only the governor and the president. So think about that.
There's no state there. So it is Pelosi in the case of D.C. because they don't have a state legislature. Congress is responsible for everything in D.C.
Yeah, but she doesn't have any authority over the National Guard. Those are the rules. I mean, we only had two commanders, the president and the governor, nobody else. That's why the governors always go to the National Guard. They beg the governors, hey, get the National Guard, become doctors or nurses. You know what the problem is? Those doctors and nurses when they're not on drill weekend are working at other hospitals.
Right.
There's a zero sum game there. It doesn't work. It doesn't do anything. It doesn't help anybody. So that's the article I wrote for American Thinker. And they published it. I said, hey, I want this published. I'm an expert at this. And they published it the next day. I was like, what?
Yeah, you're basically moving doctors. It's like musical chairs game.
It is. Exactly. You see it. It doesn't make any sense. But it makes the governors look better. Makes them feel good, you know, and I did something. At least I did something.
Mm-hmm.
But you didn't. But yeah.
We're usually better off when the government doesn't do something.
So now you have, okay, let's go to a little lower level, like the school boards. I love these things. I like to watch arguments and everything, and it's all true. And I think they're just as vicious as your right, federal.
No. I'm going to take you even lower.
Okay.
I live in a small county in Pennsylvania, or not small county. I live in a county, an average county in Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
I contacted my county elections office to find out what elected jobs were open at the county level in my county. And the county elections office came back and said, well, there's 100 judge of elections and inspector of elections vacancies in my county. And there was also a whole bunch of constables. Now here in Pennsylvania, the constable is the oldest law enforcement in our country. They were established in 1664. Each town in Pennsylvania can elect a state constable. They really don't have a whole lot of duty anymore. They have statewide authority, but the only job that they are required by law to do is to guard the polls on election day.
Ah,
they're the only law enforcement allowed at the polls on election day. So when I found out that there were 100 judge of elections and inspector of elections offices only, and I think it was 25 constable jobs open, I went, wait a minute, my town didn't elect a constable. Elections have gotten pretty ugly, and I suspect they're going to keep getting uglier. So I looked into what happens when your town doesn't elect a constable, and I got myself appointed Pennsylvania State Constable for the borough of Bellefonte, Pennsylvania.
Awesome.
It was really easy to do, but they got me thinking even more. If there's 100 open election related jobs in one county, and there's what, 3,000 counties in this country, that means there's, I can't suspect that Center County, Pennsylvania is all that remarkable in how they get poll workers. So I would suspect that there's probably 300,000 vacancies in election day poll workers. So if you're one of those people out there that claim the election was rigged, it was stolen, and you haven't taken one of those jobs, shame on you. You're stop your bitching and right. Do it. Like, if you're not willing to sit on election day for 12 or 14 hours or whatever it is and check names off a list and do what they do on election day at the polling station, but you want to sit there and gripe and groan about that the election was stolen, you're a hypocrite.
You have me interested right now. I'm looking this up. See, I got my pen and pad right here.
Yep.
I'm going to look into this because I never knew that existed. Awesome.
You have to contact your county elections office. That most of them don't post anything online that's usable. So you'll have to like call them and say, hey. But yeah, so I now have, I'm a Pennsylvania State Constable. I get a big fancy uniform and a gun and a badge and all that kind of stuff. And every election day, I play dress up and I go around to the 4 polling stations in my neighborhood and make sure nobody's causing trouble.
You are a hero in my book. That's awesome.
That's a little far, but
no, I mean, you found out, you figured this out where nobody else has a clue. You actually looked into it, and I have to admire that because I had no idea. I thought there was just poll workers and there's people there, you know, putting blinds up and whatever and hiding things. No, there's more.
The judge of elections and inspector of elections are both elected jobs that require 2 days of work a year, election day and primary day.
Do they get paid?
Yeah. I mean, it depends on your state and your town and everything. And mine, around here, they make like $100 a day or something like that. It's not a lot of money.
That's a lot of money. Not really. I mean, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That is you got the title and everything.
Yeah.
I love it. I dig it.
I'd whip out the badge and show you, but I don't have it in my pocket right now.
It's like being a kid again in some ways. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. So you said you like RBN. I'm actually going to be on RBN tonight. We're recording on Monday night. I'm going to be on with Jeremy, 10 o'clock Eastern time, as his guest. And then this coming Thursday, I will be hosting the National Intel Report again.
That's a big program. That's John's old program, right?
Yep. It's a lot of fun too.
Yeah. I like that. I like that. All that stuff. Jeremy, what's his last name?
Sorry. I'm a mailman. I spend all day looking at names. I try to take it home.
Jeremy Slattery. Maybe that's him. I can't remember. I think it is, but yeah, good people over there and welcome. I want to say welcome to our network, PNR. Patriot Nation Radio, PNR is a great outfit with a lot of good people. We just got 2 new good ringers right now. We got pros added to the list to go along with this, to compliment what we do. I appreciate you and Aaron. You and Aaron are on fire. And when I saw you, I heard you broadcast RBN. I was thinking, man. And I heard a rumor that you might be interested before that I contacted you. So I'm happy you decided to come on board. And we like having you here. And I got Aaron. I didn't know Aaron wasn't started yet as of a couple of weeks ago. And I said, hey, he was on my show. And I said, hey, when's your show going to be on? He's like, oh, nobody asked me. I said, we'll take care of that. Pick a day that doesn't conflict with anybody else's. And it's great. He's got a beautiful show. I think he does Saturdays. I enjoy what he does, what you guys both bring to the network. And I appreciate your insight, because you have a lot of constitutional things that we don't know that we love to hear, and people don't normally hear that. So, and tell us when your show is on, when it airs on any station, all of them.
All of them.
Okay. Yes.
Liberty-Lighthouse.com is my website where you can find my books, The Liberty Minute, The Liberty Lighthouse, merchandise and swag and all that kind of stuff. The show Liberty Lighthouse, when I live stream, because I don't always do video, but when I do, it's Thursday nights at 7 o'clock. And then Friday nights at 6 o'clock on Patriot Nation Radio, Saturday nights at 8 o'clock on Mojo 50 and WBN 324.
Awesome.
All three of those are audio networks. And I tell my guests, I said, look, this is basically a radio show. I just turn on the cameras for people that refuse to listen to the radio, but they'll watch video.
Right. Yeah. We watch the video, and you see, everybody sees how nice and crisp your screen is. Look how mine is kind of blurry here, but you know, that is, I'll just upgrade my camera. That's what I got to do. You know, but I don't really do video that much, but hopefully, you know, I'm looking at this other, there are other opportunities that require video. So this is one of the reasons I'm on the show, but I appreciate you coming on this program.
I bought a cheap 4K camcorder when I was going to North Carolina for a Constitution Party event. And I wanted to broadcast live from the event. And so I had to have a camcorder rather than, you know, a little webcam. And I bought it, and then when I came home, I just stuck it on a tripod, and there it is. So yeah, hi.
maybe I'll invest in that. I don't know. I'm not sure. I'll see if that's feasible. If I'm going to do this for a while, then maybe I will for the visual part of it. I think it looks fabulous. You look fabulous, but I guess it doesn't really matter. Who cares, right? I do, because I keep talking about it. So we can we only have like 10 minutes left. Do you have anything you want to say or convey to the audience?
Hey, you know, I end all of my shows by saying protect your liberties. Once they're gone, there's no getting them back. That's how I end the Liberty Lighthouse every week. And I end the Liberty Minute every day by saying Civis Pacem Parabellum, which means if you want peace, prepare for war. So those are the two messages that I want to get out there you've got to prepare for the bad and hope for the good, you know, and just, you got to guard your liberties. And in order to guard your liberties, you have to know what they are. You have to know who's taking them and why and how, because they sneak up on you. And we can't let it happen, because once they're gone, there's no getting them back. Very rarely does the government take anything from us and then give it back later.
You know, and those are very true and timely words. Those are fit perfectly in today's world and what things that are going on right now in our country and our world. They make all the sense. You have to protect your own liberty. You never know, because they are taking them away slowly. If we let them, they will take them all away all at once. So, I hear you all the time, parabellum. So, you know, I know what it means. I
was like, what is special that? Parabellum.
Love it. Well, I'll let you go. I appreciate you coming on the program today. And I hope people learn something. I always learn something from my guests, and that's my goal. And that's why I don't have questions ahead of time. I don't know what I'm going to say, but I listen to you and I say, hey, I got questions about what he just said.
Yeah.
I think it works out better that way. I don't know if you do the same thing or not.
Yeah, if you're quick enough to come up with them. I generally speaking, if I've got a guest coming on, I do a little research as to who they are. If I have a specific question that I want to make sure that I answer, I might write that down. But generally speaking, you want to feed off the conversation. You don't want to be the robot going,
right.
You were talking about quality of audio equipment at affordable prices. Could you explain what you mean by that?
Right. I've seen people do that, but by the way, your show is going to be, I'm going to let everybody know, this is going to be the Wednesday night show. I'm going to take the audio from here, and it's going to be available forever. They never take anything off that PNR network. So you'll be able to go back to the dates and cruise all the shows and watch this again and actually share it. And I think the same thing with the Zoom, I'm going to have that available if you want. I'll send you a copy of it.
Thanks.
It's recording. So I appreciate you coming on my show. I love hearing you talk about things that we don't know or things that we can learn from. So we're going to end this broadcast. Thanks everyone for watching the American Legion Show, and thanks to our guests and our listeners and our visitors. And we'll see you on Wednesday night. The same show, the people that missed this will see this again Wednesday night. And I'm going to use, I have a picture from your Facebook page, and I'm going to make a nice promo for it. It's going to look great. So, and I'll send you that link. So thanks a lot. That's our guest, Mr. Peter Serafin. And we want you to plug your books real quick, so people can
read books. Progress, really. One man's view of social progress in America, and so simple even a politician can understand simple ideas for seemingly complex political issues. You can get me to sign them and send them out to you. Signed copies for $10 at liberty-lighthouse.com, or buy them on Amazon for like $7.99. If you do that, I expect a review.
Yes. Yes, sir. Well, thank you very much. And you have a nice evening, sir, and enjoy your next show. Won't be as good as this one, but enjoy it anyway if you can.
Thank you very much. Have a great night.
All right, you too. Thanks, everyone. And we are going to sign off. And this is going to be the end of the show. And I appreciate you listening to the American Legion Show, host Kevin White. Thank you very much. And we're out.
We're out. It's really hot in my studio.
Oh, really?
And I have an air conditioner like right next to me, but I don't like to have it playing or running while I'm recording. Because I always fear that it puts a hum.